With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it's the weekend, and it's John Gibbons hosting this week. I'm joined by Adam Melia, by Dan Austin, and by Kiva O'Neill to talk about, well, obviously last night we're going to have to, but we're also going to look ahead to Sunday's game against Manchester City. We've got a couple of inserts for you, as ever. Earlier in the week, I spoke to Ian from Football for Change about a fantastic organisation that started up in Liverpool working with young people. And also, Harrison has done an insert for us with young people, of which I'm very much not anymore, unfortunately. But lots of people 21 or younger. Just talking about the rivalry between Man City and what it means to that generation, and that generation who've grown up on it a little bit more than what those of us who were 80s and 90s babies maybe haven't. And so he's joined by Chloe, by Cam, and by Sam Evo to talk about that. But in the meantime, we're going to have to look back on Brighton, whether we like it or not. And Adam, it was just such a frustrating one because we got the two wins. You were all feeling good about life again. We were looking forward to Man City, but it was very much a just get Brighton out the way, and then we very much did not get Brighton out the way.
I know it's really hard to know where to place it, isn't it? Because as I just said to you just before we started, it's almost like them two wins didn't happen now, and we've just I feel like we've just been placed exactly back in where we were previously. And I sort of hadn't kind of thought about it as being a specifically home games problem, but yeah. You know, it kind of feels a bit like that now. That it's been, we haven't scored a goal in a game at home since December, and it was just really frustrating. And I think it just seems to be the pattern at the moment is just absolutely unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it, which it starts a few hours before the game when you hear a rumour that somebody might be injured. They always are. So, you know, it's really, and then obviously, you know, once it starts, then the kind of malaise is just absolutely, I don't know, it's like being in a vice or something, isn't it? And I listened to yours and Neil's commentary last night, which I thought was really good, and that's been part of my coping mechanism, is to not watch them anymore. I've been listening to the radio or having visuals on and listening to music, because it's just I'm finding it hard kind of in a big picture sense and an every game sense, because it's just the cruelty of kind of what's happened with us not having a chance to celebrate being champions. It just gets brought into sharper and sharper focus, doesn't it, by each time we move further away from the idea that we might be able to do bounce two in a row and greet the team as champions at the time, instead of greeting a team that has won the league once but isn't the champions anymore. So it's really tough, and the idea of even listening to a podcast, let alone being on one, the last thing any of us want to do.
Kiva, what do you think it was that was going wrong for the team? Because I couldn't figure out personally whether it was individual performances that were a bit kind of down on where they've been the last couple of games. So, you know, Firmino had a couple of good games and then felt like he'd regressed, similar to the fullbacks, or whether it was kind of a structural thing, really, and whether there was something wrong with how we were set up or what it is we were trying to do. What do you think?
They were crap. They were pretty rubbish last night, wasn't they? And like Adam sort of pointed out there, you know, those two games, it felt like Liverpool were back, and it was like, you know, even the United game in the FA Cup, it was like, you know, the lads are starting to do bits and move about a bit more than they used to, and, you know, the passes seemed sharper and the pressing seemed more intense and aggressive, and that's what we were used to, weren't we, for so long? And then now it just seems like one game and it's just all gone away again. But then on the hope of that, I feel like surely a big win against Man City can bring it back again. Do you know what I mean? Because the pendulum this season, it just seems to swing week in and week out. Like, someone different's winning the league. Obviously, Man City now are just like, you know, so they look so dominant, don't they? But I feel like if Liverpool win at the weekend, they can just change it all again. I know, obviously, it would have been nice to now be, what would it be, 4 points behind them with a win last night, and then that could be to go within 1 point. And I know they've got the game in hand. That would be a better position to play Sunday's game on, but we're not there, so it's 7 points, and Liverpool have got to bring it back down to four and hope that City go on a weird little quirky run. Can we call it quirky? Just rubbish, that Liverpool have been, you know, lacking energy at times, and then in games, like, I think that's why it's so troubling, is just because the trips to London were just so fun, even though we didn't get to go on them. You know, they were enjoyable to watch, and it just felt like everyone was waiting for this little speed bump of just to get over Brighton, and then we were all just ready for the weekend then, and Liverpool's sort of title charge was starting from here. But then now it's all been undone, and it kind of like is weird, because that game last night felt very much like West Brom, Burnley. It just, it's like you can feel it coming, and last season you didn't have that. You always felt like the later games like that went on, Liverpool would do something and they'd fix it, and they don't have that gear to run into anymore. It just feels like that's lost. I think obviously Firmino's goal against Tottenham in December was the late show was back, but I don't know, they've seemed to lost that spark of belief going towards the end of the game, and I think other sides are reading it and picking up on it, and I think that's the most worrying thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what's worrying me really, Dan, is that, because, you know, it's not necessarily that we're starting games slowly or even that they're not playing particularly well, because there was plenty of games like that last season really. It's the fact that we're not able to find this other gear. It's the fact that they don't seem to believe by a certain point in the game that they can go on and win it, really. And you see that in them, and you see the sort of, I don't know if it's tension or what, but it doesn't seem to be that, you know, this is our game and we're going to do it. And, you know, you as fans feel it, and it's starting to feel like they as players feel it too.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. You know, there'll be tactical reasons why Liverpool are struggling to just even have a decent shot against teams in the bottom six, but I don't think it's the most important thing. The best thing about the Liverpool team last season was the psychology of them. I watched them a lot in the flesh last season, either going to the game or going for work in the press box. And I remember the Norwich game in particular at Carroll Road. They were not very good. They were really quite poor, Liverpool, that day. Struggled to make chances. It was February by that point, so the form had maybe tailed off about a month, 6 weeks before then. Didn't really make any significant chance in the game for about 60 minutes. But Liverpool knew they were going to win, and crucially, Norwich knew they were going to lose. And it was evident throughout the whole thing. And so it came to be in the end. Liverpool made the thing happen, and Norwich accepted that they would lose. So Liverpool knew that no matter what happened, it was the same at Crystal Palace as well. They were poor there in the November, conceded and had about 5 minutes to score a winner, and just did, because they knew that they could, and it was likely that they would, so they made it happen. So they had a belief in how the thing would end, regardless of the pattern. Now they've got the same belief that the thing will end in a certain way, but it's gone totally the opposite way. They've developed this fatalism rather than a belief in themselves. And I think you could see it from 10 or 15 minutes in last night. You know, I'm looking at it, and you're looking at it, and the people who are listening are looking at it and going, I don't think Liverpool are going to score here. But more importantly, the 11 players on the pitch for Liverpool all look like they thought, we aren't going to score here. Because they feel like they've played that out so many times before, and it's just going to happen again. So they've managed to turn what was the side's greatest strength, beyond technical ability, beyond goal scoring, anything else, into its biggest problem. And that problem is created by the injury crisis at its genesis, absolutely 100%. But Liverpool's mental reactions in games lately have just been so, so poor. And it's such a shame to see from a team that we knew was, you know, the most mentally strong Liverpool side we've ever seen, maybe the most mentally strong side that the country has ever seen. And it's what put them on that run of 26 out of 27 last season, and no one's asking them to kind of repeat that again. You can't possibly expect that, even if everybody were fully fit and playing well, never mind in the situation that they found themselves in. But to have just ended up at the total opposite end of the spectrum, where the belief that the thing would play out has gone from, you know, we'll just win this game no matter what because we can make it happen, to, oh my fucking God, we're not going to do anything in this game, and therefore we're going to panic, we're going to make wrong decisions. It's just really, really disappointing, and I'm not quite sure how you fix it, really, because it's everyone that plays for Liverpool at the minute. It looks quite like that. They've had the sort of, I think, bounce of having people like Shaqiri come in and play, who's a bit outside of that because he's just not been involved for ages, so he can just come in and be a bit mad for a while, and everyone thinks, oh, well, this is a bit different at least, and we can play a slightly different shape. But then once the malaise sort of hits those players in a mental sense as well, then it becomes hard to see how they sort of get themselves out of that. And I'm more preoccupied with that, or worried about that myself, than even like even the injuries, or even, you know, one, two, three players' particular form or what have you. It's this sort of stranglehold that it seems to have on them all, where they just completely go within themselves and look terrified after 10, 15 minutes of playing against quite mediocre footy teams.
Do you think the centre-halves coming in might help, Adam, sometimes? You know, new lads coming in any form sort of gives everyone a little bit of a boost, really. But also allow us to sort of relax about that, really, because, you know, I think Henderson and Phillips' last couple of games have done okay, but, you know, there is all that tension around, you know, makeshift and are they meant to be there, and also getting Henderson back in midfield.
I do, actually, and I was gonna sort of not disagree, but maybe just on a. I'm trying to decide sort of the level as to which I kind of agree with what Dan's saying about how everybody's mood is being impacted, which is it's apparent and it is obvious, but and Dan says that it's kind of like, you know, happening, you know, regardless of the injuries, but I do think that it must be linked. Yeah, because when Dan was talking, I was thinking, I, at the moment, you can sort of see people saying, we just need to get Jota back, and, you know, and that'll kind of, you know, get things sorted. And I appreciate that feeling as somebody who is constantly kind of looking to see when the injured player X is due back in. But I remember doing that for Thiago. I remember doing it for Matip, and, you know, and obviously long term doing the same for Virgil. And I sort of, in my mind, I kind of think, this has been so bad now, this kind of injury crisis, and so deep, more than any of us, I'm sure, probably worse than, not, never mind any of us can remember, it's the worst injury crisis I would say that Liverpool have ever had. So, you know, even if Virgil hadn't, you know, got injured at Goodison, I think that there would have been an element of this happening anyway, to be fair, just because of the way the season's gone. But you know, you can't use your crystal ball. But I do think that having said all that, and I think that getting some midfielders into midfield would certainly help. And I do think that there is the depth of it all is, it, even though it kind of is and it isn't as bad as we think and as bad as it feels, because confidence is such a massive thing in football that you're constantly papering over cracks. The best teams in the world paper over cracks all the time with confidence. So certainly I think that it's quite hard mentally to sort of place yourself and say where we go from here. The team, I do believe that to be to finish top four, you kind of need to be going for the league. You can't think we need to finish top four. So it's really difficult to kind of gauge how you psych yourself up going forward, because it does look really, it kind of looked as if the league had gone anyway, barring a miraculous and unprecedented this season run of four from us and City messing up about three or four times, which didn't look very likely. So it probably was gone anyway, but it looks pretty gone now. So it's hard to say where we go, but I think that what we do need to do is get these new defenders into the team for various reasons. But, you know, one of the main ones is getting the midfielders back in midfield. I think as soon as we can get Kabak playing, he needs to be playing every game, really. You know, we need to start getting some settled centre half games, and I do think that things will start to improve. But yeah, we just it needs to happen. It needs to happen quickly.
I don't know what you're talking about, Adam. I bounced out of bed this morning, ready to make lots of content. At least, I mean, it's weird for Kiva. She's got to write about it. At least I get to have a laugh. But it is a thing, isn't it, Kiva? I hadn't thought about, you know, the home thing. I just, you know, thought of what our home and away games now. I just thought of two wins on the bounce. But maybe it is getting in the heads a little bit, the home form and the toil. A particular at home, really, and they did toil last night, and that sort of toil never seemed to find a way to stop.
I think it was Brighton, to be honest. It looked like they had about 30 players on the pitch at times, didn't it? Yeah, it was just like ridiculous. And I think Dan hit the nail on the head, you know, just in terms of the psychology of it all, and the mentality just seems to be not there. It was there for the past two games, and then as soon as it, you know, you get into that 10 minutes and it feels like the Burnley game already, and that's never a good thing. It feels like West Brom, that's never a good thing. Liverpool, like, sort of lost the way in terms of, like, they were going to Robertson and Alexander-Arnold, and it was kind of like, oh, what do we do now? Like, do we try and, oh, let's try and go through the middle. Oh no, there's loads of Brighton players there. Let's go to the side again. And then we'll go back to the, and then it just never felt like anything was sort of coming off. And I think that's when you look to someone like Thiago to play that pass that just breaks through, but not could break through. And it just felt like, you know, like you alluded to there, I do feel like playing midfielders like Henderson in your defence is never going to be a good thing. As much as we're all bored of talking about it, it's just like you kind of just, it'd be a mad thing to do, but imagine just throwing Davis and Kabak in against City, and at least, you know, we've had a million centre-half partnerships over the course of the season. At least we'd have two defenders as mad as, you know, they've never played together, and what a big game. But just to have, you know, the chance of, if Fabinho's back, get him in midfield, Henderson, you know, just to have that screen there to let Thiago go and do his thing. You know, Wijnaldum, I think, played well in the past couple of games, and he just looked a little bit off the boil last night. Firmino, who stitches everything together, as you mentioned, it was straight away, he was giving away a few little passes here and there, and then a player like Oxlade-Chamberlain comes on, and you're thinking, you know, can he add a little bit of energy? And he was just running into walls. And then Origi, he kind of just feels like his sort of Liverpool career is over now, and it's quite painful to watch it sort of play out, doesn't it? Just because he just doesn't seem to. I think if he scores against Burnley, I think this season for him could be different. You know, that could be the moment where it's like, you know, but he come on and just didn't seem to offer anything and didn't really know where to be. And Salah's been great in the past few games, but, you know, he was sort of cut a lonely figure at times, wasn't he? There was no one really making those runs from midfield, which I think, you know, is what Liverpool do best. You could see James Milner trying his best, but he's just played like back-to-back games, and he's, you know, he's not getting any younger, is he? He took a knock early on, and it just felt like everything just wasn't there for Liverpool. And obviously without Alisson, I thought Kelleher was great towards the end. He kept Liverpool in the game, even at 1-0 down. But I just think having that energy that ruminates from the back from Alisson is just a confident thing. I thought Phillips was unlucky not playing the ball. But, you know, we mentioned Van Dijk, that those players and their mentality just being there, it just like, it feeds across the whole pitch, and Liverpool are lacking that at the minute. And to be honest, you know, we've listened to those clips of Henderson shouting and, you know, what a great leader he is. And I couldn't really hear him last night, even over the you know, the fake sound and the commentary, which is like, I think, you know, maybe he even had a bad game, and, you know, playing at the back is probably not where he wants to be. And there must be times when he's there just like, oh my God, what am I doing here? Like, what do we do now? Like, you'd panic, surely. It's not like your usual position. There's no one behind you but the goalkeeper. So, you know, it is a bit of a difficult time for Liverpool at the minute.
The pattern, sorry to interrupt, the pattern of the these home games has been, with Alisson in goal, that he's managed to keep out a golden chance at some point during the second half. So that happening like it did was kind of predictable, wasn't it, really? And I had thought it before, you know, before the game, If it does turn into one of those games and we're struggling to score, Brighton might get that one chance that Alisson saves, and it's not Alisson.
It's funny one that O'Keefe said about the passages of play, Dan, because we seem to go from deciding crosses were the enemy and shite to crosses are brilliant and nothing in between. So in a lot of the first half, we were just outright refusing to put it in the box. And then the second half, we're like, oh, fuck it, we're just going to put everything in the box. And it feels like, I don't know, there might be a happy medium somewhere.
Yeah, perhaps there is. They just look devoid of creativity so often. And we know from the evidence that these are, you know, six of the most creative footballers in the world that are playing in Liverpool's front six last night. And we've seen them do incredible things very recently. You know, the two goals that Salah scored on a weekend were some of the best that we've seen from Liverpool in a very, very long time. So it's not like it's not possible for them. I think the way that Brighton defend and the way that all of the top six sides have bottom six sides have defended against Liverpool has been really good and made it really hard. And yeah, when you've got incredibly tall people to try and get around or through, it does make it harder, especially when they're a really tight unit. But Liverpool look like they're just making incorrect decisions and taking incorrect risks to me. So they'll take a risk in terms of putting a mad cross in when only one person's in the box, but they won't maybe try and beat a man one-on-one on the wing. And that's much easier said than done. Just mean it's easy to get past someone. But they look like they get themselves into patterns for games where it's like, well, we'll do 20 minutes of this and see if that works. And then if that doesn't work, we'll try 20 minutes of this. Mm. And then that becomes, if you're Brighton or if you're the defending team, once you sort of do the first 5 minutes of defending whatever that new ploy is, then you go, oh, all right, this is what they're doing now. We can settle into that. And it's easier again when there's no crowd, you know, screaming at you from behind as well. So the combination of not having us there to help them, but also them developing these really obvious and really predictable patterns just makes defending a piece of piss for lads who love doing it week in, week out. And it's mad that Liverpool have got to the position where they look like one of the easiest teams in the division to defend against if you are a side lower down. I think we'll get loads more joy out of Man City on the weekend because they'll be higher up the pitch and they'll actually have a go. But the vast majority of teams that Liverpool play aren't going to be like Man City. They're going to be more like Brighton, and Liverpool therefore need to find a way around it. I think what's worrying and what makes me, you know, think that maybe the odd player coming back from injury doesn't necessarily right everything here, although it is the genesis of the problem, absolutely, is that it's been very, very rare lately that Liverpool have made a substitution and they've looked any better.
Yeah.
I think Curtis Jones was the other day against West Ham, but I think that's the first time in maybe a few months where that's happened. And it's not even necessarily to do with the quality of the player. Like, Origi came on last night and it was abysmal, but, you know, we played Burnley and lost to them the other week and he brought Salah and Firmino on, and we look no better. And again, to me, that's a psychological thing where there's no... The lads that are already on the pitch, who the new ones are coming on to join, none of them look revitalised by a change, and that's the whole point of one, is to not just, you know, maybe change a shape or try and do something different. It's to give everyone a boost and go, you know what, you've got someone here with fresh legs you can use as an out ball, or you've got someone coming on who might be more likely to score because we haven't so far, so it's worth a shot, isn't it? But none of them look like they have any belief, no matter who comes on, that it's going to get better. You know, we were worse after the changes last night. We were worse after the changes against Burnley and Man United. And that's a real problem because that again feels like it plays into your point about the patterns. They just get into this fatalism where they think that nothing's going to make it better, nothing that they try, nothing that the manager tries. And, you know, if we had all of the injured players back tomorrow, then yeah, it might right that because suddenly you've got loads more options and the centre-half problem is fixed. But that isn't going to happen. We might get one soonish. And then whoever it is, well, it might be Keita before Jota, who knows. But whoever it is, from the way they're reacting to changes or just changes in the template of play, doesn't seem like they'll be able to just give them that belief that they're lacking. So I am concerned by that.
Yeah. Okay, we'll have a little bit of a break now. We're going to obviously come back in the room and talk about Manchester City, but there's a couple of inserts in the meantime, but then we'll all be back to preview Manchester City. So yeah, enjoy Football for Change, and obviously Harrison talking to his team about Liverpool v Man City's rivalry. And it's John Gibbons with Neil Atkinson for an insert, and it's an audio beam insert, and it's for Manscaped. And Neil is joining me to talk about Manscaped. They've got a very Valentine's Day themed briefing today, which is quite funny. 2 million men, it says here, are already trusting Manscaped products to groom, and make sure you're one of them. I've got some Manscaped products.
In this country, or do you think that's worldwide?
It's surely worldwide, because if so, if it's in this country, that's a lot.
They're moving faster than the pace of vaccination, I'd say.
Everyone would be talking about it, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I won't be able to move for vaccination and Manscaped chat. Maybe it's part of the same process. Maybe you get vaccinated. The over 80s are coming out with little Manscaped packages on the other side. Been waiting for this for years, love. Thank you very much.
Oh, that's how they're doing it. For Manscaped, for those who haven't guessed yet, is below the waist grooming. That's how they've phrased it here, which is beautifully put. Below the waist grooming. But I'll be honest, for the rest of the talking months, there's a lot of balls chat. So there we are. But I've had mine. You're still patiently waiting, Neil. You're not one indeed. Of the 2 million.
I am not one of the 2 million. And, you know, I just think, I mean, I wouldn't want the below the waist grooming situation to get out of hand whilst I'm waiting patiently. You know, it wouldn't be fantastic in general, you know, but I am waiting patiently. I'm quite committed, and have been for, like, I think it's a moment in your life when you realise that you need to commit to below the waist grooming. And I am quite committed to it now in general. I think if you haven't had that moment, then obviously, you know, I've got a friend of mine who once asked everybody in a group of our mates on an afternoon out at the races who was doing it, and his major concern was he didn't want to start now because he didn't want his wife to think he had ulterior motives, but he was desperate to do something about the situation. So maybe you need to bring your loved ones into this chat about below the waist grooming and just say, listen, it's time to get a grip of it, and there's this excellent product.
Yeah, and it is available for Valentine's Day, which is what they're sort of pushing here. What you get as part of your perfect package, they're calling it, is the revolutionary third generation lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. That's what their words, not mine, which is advanced skin safe technology, which is very important. And features a cutting edge ceramic.
Take no risks.
To reduce grooming accidents. I'll be honest, Neil, in my experience, I will say I felt very safe. And that is what I would say. I felt my balls were safe in their hands, so to speak, which is very important as well. Loads of other stuff come with it as well, to sort of just make it a bit more of a nice experience. And you can try it, and you can get 20% off plus shipping with the code WRAP20. So it's WRAP20 at manscaped.com. So if you go to manscaped.com and put in the code WRAP20, you will get 20% off. And there we are. And yeah, It's good to be on top of these sorts of things, is what I'd say.
It's a necessity, I'd say, John. I'd say it's a necessity in the year of our Lord 2021. It is a necessity to be all over this. So, no, I think people should genuinely consider it. As I say, I'm waiting for my package to come through. But, you know, I think if people want to get signed up, I will get signed up. I'll get on top of it. And I'd say it's not just for Valentine's Day, you know, like a dog's not just for Christmas.
Yeah, all sorts of freebies they're throwing in there as well. Stuff around hygiene, stuff around keeping you smooth down there. Also a pair of boxer shorts as well, so you can, you know, advertise whenever once. It's, you know, so people know what they're getting. You know, there's a man in Manscapes. This is going to be good. So there you are. So it is WRAP20 and manscaped.com. WRAP20 and manscaped.com. So get involved. And they're obviously supporting us as well, so it'd be good if you could support them. But thanks a lot to Neil. And now back to the main show. And it is John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Ian Donaldson, who's come to talk to us about football for change. So, Ian, first of all, thanks for coming on and welcome to the Anfield Wrap.
Oh, thanks for having me. Delighted to be here. Thank you.
So I guess the obvious place to start is, what is football for change, and why is it you've decided to get involved?
Yeah, I think it's just a passionate thing to myself and footballers, you know, as business leaders and footballers, something we want to get involved with. You know, collaboration between both the business leaders and footballers to see how we can help young people facing, you know, the adversity and the challenging communities that they're living in across the country. Looking at how we can sort of fund sort of projects helping young school leavers, particularly those. You know, with economic and social barriers to, you know, just where they can't really achieve their potential through no fault of their own, and just a mix of business leaders and footballers as role models for different reasons for these individuals to show the different pathways that they can take on and the opportunities that are there, no matter what background that they're starting out from.
I mean, role models is such an important thing, isn't it, for young people? And unfortunately, some people don't have them in the home. And then when they look maybe into where they live, they sometimes end up looking in the wrong place. And so when people can see people who've achieved from a similar background to them, it's such a massive thing, isn't it?
I totally agree. You know, there's so many footballers that have come from quite deprived backgrounds and business leaders exactly the same. You know, very humble background myself. My parents were divorced as I was at a young age. And back in the 80s, when a lot of people used to spend a lot of time at the grandparents or live with the grandparents, I was one of those kids and wanted to be a footballer. I was at the School of Excellence at Port Vale Football Club, local to where I am in Stoke. And went through that. So it wasn't an academy back then, more of a School of Excellence with a great role model, Mike Pedgick, ex-pro footballer. It was amazing for me, you know, picked me up and collected me and ran me around because I didn't have, you know, our family didn't have a car. So, you know, all those sort of things, everybody aspires to do something. I ended up in business at the age of, well, I ended up working in insurance at the age of 18 and transitioned into my own career. And football wasn't the path for me, but that can happen to so many young kids. And as they fall out of football or they fall out of the education system, we just want to be there and try and show them the different pathways, football and business, and show them that every opportunity is there. Like I say, no matter where they've started out, the opportunities are there for each and every one of them. That's a real focus for us. And I know Trent Alexander has done a lot already, and he's really keen to get involved. And he's seen a lot in the area that he comes from, where, you know, people can quite easily take the wrong pathway and make the wrong decision. And it's just that time they make that one decision wrong at that one point, and that can affect the rest of their lives. And if through Football for Change we can make that decision a more sensible one and we can direct them on a different pathway, then that's the success that could be behind it.
You mentioned Trent there as one of the footballers who you've managed to sort of get involved in this, and, you know, just a few others who've sort of lent their support, Jamie Carragher, Connor Cody, can't forget the Blues, of course, Andy Gordon, Neville Southall as well, and yeah, shout out to Gary Neville as well. We've got to do it. First time I'll ever do it on the on-field map.
It's an interesting one that Gary Neville's name's on the list, and there's a whole host more that are going to be coming on board. As well as business leaders. And I think we take this opportunity to a shout out to any business leaders in the area, you know, in the Northwest area and beyond, that want to get involved and help us with this and just sort of put an arm around some of these lads and lasses as they come out of education or they come out of football, whatever it is, and where we can just sort of, you know, bring them into the business world or offer them different sort of coaching in football, whatever it is. So huge shout out to all of the business leaders that are getting involved. Let's get more involved and make this a bigger and better thing. You know, we've got some actresses and actresses and presenters that are getting involved. It is phenomenal. The more we get behind it, I think the more engagement we'll get from the youngsters, and they'll see the, you know, the different stories and the different opportunities that we can put down in front of them.
It's more important than ever, isn't it, in terms of supporting young people, because, you know, with this pandemic, it's tough for everyone and it's tough across society, but there's plenty of evidence out there to show that it's going to affect young people more and also people from deprived backgrounds kind of more as well. And so anything that we can all do as a society, just to make sure that people aren't dropping through the cracks and making people sure that people are aware of opportunities that are out there is vital, isn't it?
I think your point there is absolutely, you know, the phrase, you know, don't let these people fall between the cracks. And that's exactly it. That's the essence of what this is about. Don't let any one of these individuals fall between the cracks and go missing or go with the wrong way in society. It's so easy for it to happen. And this pandemic it's almost compelling what the problems are. It's not helping. Education is suffering massively, as we know. You know, they're going to be known as the COVID generation when they're going for jobs or they're going for university spaces. And we've got to do all we can as business leaders and role models and footballers, whatever it is that we can get these people into, helping them into further education, helping them into sort of job training schemes. You know, it's estimated that over 1 million young people could end up being unemployed this year because of the impact of the pandemic. And because of that, inevitably, it's the poorer areas that get the biggest percentage of this unemployment.
Yeah.
And for youth to be hit hard, not just by the pandemic, but then hit hard yet again when they come out of education and there's no sort of jobs, I think, again, going back to this call out to business leaders to get involved with this, because there's some amazing talent out there and it's attracting them into our workplace and offering them roles and jobs, but not just bottom end roles, minimum wage roles, actually showing them some sort of career progression and what they can do and how they can start, you know, at the bottom of some organizations, accepting of that, but have a clear path to, I always say like a clear path to glory, but a clear, you know, whatever, that's a football kind of, a football sort of phrase, but a clear path to sort of an improved career and a better life for them, and a better income, so they can set themselves up for life themselves as individuals. And it's down to themselves. You know, we don't want to put things on a plate. We just want to put the opportunities out there for them.
Absolutely. So what are your plans over the next year, mate? I know it's obviously tough for everyone. You know, I'm sure plans have been written and then ripped up as the life changes. But what are you hoping to do over the next 12 months?
I mean, all the stuff that we had loads of plans to have some sort of, you know, get some dinners, you know, get some fundraising events, whether it's dinners, whether it was football tournaments, whether it was getting us in and around some of these schools and communities, where myself, the business leaders, the footballers, whoever, just explaining that, look, when this education piece ends, or when this football academy thing ends, your life doesn't end. What's next? How can we sort of paint a pathway into a new job, into new education? Explain that what we've done as individuals and how our very differing paths across, you know, people like myself and Trent and Jamie and you know, let's throw Gary Neville's name in there yet again. But he's, I mean, look at the success he's had in and out of football, you know, excellent football career, albeit for United. But then you look at his business acumen and what them guys are doing, it's outstanding. And to share that sort of information with these youngsters, I think it's just paramount importance now that they understand that it's not just I wanted to be a footballer, I'm not no more, so off I go doing maybe things that, you know, I really shouldn't, and you know, I tried to work in one place, it didn't work for me, and then they got rid of me and it didn't quite work out. We need to understand what their worries and concerns are, and then explain all the mistakes and the bumps in the road that we have all had in our varying roles and careers, and let them understand that, yeah, each and every one of us has these sort of bumps in the road, but how do we help sort of smooth those out? How can we show them these different opportunities and channels? And I think, you know, we're going to do as many things as we can out in the community, as much fundraising as we can, get business people involved, you know, create a situation where once we've got more and more money being generated, how do we deploy that into these areas where it's needed? How do we deploy it into an education service to these individuals, so they can see the next steps that they can take really on their own with support of the foundation.
It all sounds fantastic. If people are listening to this and they want to lend their support, you know, they might be, you know, have a business themselves and they think they can lend some support, so they might be a footballer, who knows, yeah, stranger things absolutely. Have happened. Yeah. How do they get in touch with you, or how do they get in touch with the organisation and offer their support?
I mean, the best thing at the moment is going on and visiting the website www.footballforchange.org.uk. All the information's on there, phone numbers and different information. And, you know, we've got some real great Premier League stars and different sort of footballers. But look, there could be footballers out there that are playing at a semi-pro level that have got their own business. You know, they fell out of football, but they're still in football at a semi-pro level, but they're working. And their sort of stories are really good for these people.
Absolutely.
To hear that, you know, you can still play at a semi-pro level and have a career and occupation. It's basically giving as many sort of role models, not just role models to look up to and aspire to, but role models that can actually evidence and sort of explain that they've endured the same problems that these youngsters are having as they come out of education, or if they're even already out of education. It isn't just for people about to come out. It's anybody that's in our areas that need our help and feel that this is something that we can help them all with, really. But yeah, it's at all levels. And I think there's a lot of people that can add a lot of value to a lot of these youngsters, and we can make a real difference. But yeah, fundraising is going to be massive as soon as we can get out and about. We're all really passionate about it. We can't, I mean, we haven't even all met up as the foundation members yet. We've not been able to get together and sort of come up with all these ideas and thoughts because of obviously the pandemic and sticking strictly to what the regulations are. But as soon as we can do, you can imagine the amount of stuff that we're going to get involved with, and then, you know, spend some time with these youngsters and understand what it is that they want and need, and see how we can deploy ourselves and the monies that we raise.
Tom Manny, it was really interesting to hear all that, and really inspiring as well. So well done to all of you for sort of trying this. And yeah, footballforchange.org.uk, as Ian said, if you want to sort of check that out and see how you can get involved. And let us know when there's a party in, because the Anfield app loves to do.
Absolutely. Well, I'll make sure that we get you along to it, and we'll make sure we sit you on a table with Gary Neville, maybe.
It's John Gibbons with the Last Fan Standing quiz. And Last Fan Standing, we're partnered with this season. It's a quiz app that you play on your phone. And me and Neil have been doing most of the quizzes, the Liverpool ones. Anyway, we don't bother with the other ones. But the Liverpool ones this season, me and Neil have been hosting and having loads of fun doing it. It's completely free. And yeah, we'd encourage you to get involved. It's good fun. And they often throw in sort of cash prizes or fun prizes in there as well. So do get involved. It's Last Fan Standing. If you go to the website or download it on whatever device you on, it's on app and Android, and it's good fun, and we want to encourage everyone to do so. And as a little guide and as a little demonstration of how Last Fan Standing works, I'm joined by Nick Fischetti, who's going to give it a go. So Nick, first of all, thanks very much for joining us bright and early where you are, I believe.
Yeah, cheers, John. I'm over in Virginia in the United States. It's 8 a.m. just finishing my coffee.
Well, we really appreciate it, Nick. And it's funny because we've not met before, but you have been in to visit the Anfield Wrap when I was having a few days off, and you've had the tour of the office in the studio.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I'm glad that the Anfield Wrap gives you some vacation time. That was really nice to hear. But yeah, you were able to set me up, and Gareth gave us a tour and did a little interview with Josh, and it was awesome to see the setup. You guys have a really nice spot down there.
Yeah, we've got it's an amazing space, and we're really lucky to have it right in the heart of the city. And I'm missing it, to be honest with you, Nick, because obviously, you know, as you can see, I'm at home at the moment, and I wish I was there, but missing it. But back soon, hey. So we'll get going anyway. So how the Last Man Standing works is you keep going until you get one wrong, and so that's what we're going to go here. So Nick, you've got 3 to beat. That is the record so far this season, so we'll see how we'll do. So I'll just get the quiz up, and here we go. So it's all about squad numbers, Nick. So question 1, Steven Gerrard has played number 8 for England. Is that true or false? So Steven Gerrard has played number 8 for England. That's true. Is that true or false?
Oof. National numbers, great. as an American, awesome. I'll go with false.
It is false. He wore number 4. He was number 4 for England for the most of his 114 games. Yeah, a bit of tricky throwing an England one at an American first up. But yeah, he never wore number 8, so well worked out. Okay, question 2. Which of these players never wore the iconic number 7 jersey for Liverpool? Kenny Dalglish, Harry Kewell, or Ronnie Whelan? So which of these players never wore the iconic number 7 shirt for Liverpool? Dalglish, Whelan, or Kewell?
I'll go with Harry Kewell.
It's incorrect. Sorry, Harry Kewell did wear the number 7. Obviously, Kenny Dalglish is our most famous one. Yeah. It's a tough one, that, because you think Ronnie Whelan, they swap numbers around so much. Surely he wore number 7 at one point, but no, Whelan is the wrong answer. So apologies. Number 1 seems to be what everyone seems to be getting so far. But if you enjoyed that, as I say, Last Fan Standing, just download it on your app. It's completely free to play, and it's really good fun. But before we let you go, Nick, how are you feeling about Sunday?
Well, I think as we saw from yesterday, Liverpool are bad against the bad teams and they're good against the good teams. So actually, ironically, I'm feeling pretty comfortable for Sunday.
Nick's feeling good. Hope you're feeling good as well. Last Man Standing app, do get involved. And yeah, we'll be doing predictor quizzes for the game this weekend that you can play right up to kickoff. So hope you enjoy that. But cheers to Nick, and back to the main show.
All right, it's Harrison Wade here for the weekend. We're going to have a little chat about Man City and the fresh rivalry between us and them, and where it started. So I'm joined by Cam Rimmer, Sam Evans, and Chloe Boxham. Cam, can I start with you? City get took over by Sheikh Mansour in 2008. Loads of money, very much like Chelsea. Signed like a Rubinho, Zabaleta company. It was my first time City away actually that year. Beat them 3-2, 2-0 down, Torres and Colt. Do you want to know, like, were you worried about them? Or was it the fact that it's another team now that can stop Chelsea and United dominating the league?
To be honest, at that time I was only like 9 or 10, so like I didn't really, obviously I followed Liverpool and that, but it was never really looking into like that much detail, and it was just like, oh, like a new team on the block sort of thing. And it was just, all I was bothered about was just going to watch Liverpool. It wasn't really paying attention to everyone else really. And Yeah, so in a way, like when they got bought, it wasn't like, like, you know, what's going to happen here sort of thing. But the first time I first like sat up and took notice of them was, I think, do you remember the game where it was Chelsea v City and like all the Wayne Bridge, John Terry stuff was all Wayne going Bridge, on?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think City beat them. I think it was like 3-2, 4-2 or something that day. I beat them at Chelsea. And Chelsea went on to win the league that year. And that was the first time I sat up and took notice of them, like with Bellamy, Tevez and all that. Yeah. And I started thinking, oh, you know, these are a decent side. And then obviously 2 years later, they win the league. But I don't know. It's a bit of a weird one with City because it's always just been United and City have always just been like City. They've just always been the other team in the city. So I've never, it's never, only until like the last couple of years, which I'm sure we'll get onto, it's never really been like such a massive thing to me. But that was the first time I probably sat up and took notice of them.
Paid attention. No, it's true. It's true. Then look, it tied in nicely. The next time I went City away was the Carling Cup semi. My brother and my dad were in the home end and empty seats. We win 1-0 that game, but from their side, there was empty seats all over the home end. And you think about the Carling Cup semi-final, considering where they'd been. They're not really in this position, obviously, with the new money that they are, but before that, they wasn't in that position. So, Chloe, what I wanted to know you, at that point, 2011-2012, you know, you're still worried about United mainly at that point, but City are coming through, aren't they? Because that season, they go on to win the league, don't they? And I think we're all made up, isn't it, when Aguero has that moment, we're just as happy as them.
Yeah, I think I can watch that moment back, and even though I don't like City, I still get goosebumps from that moment, yeah. Because that's what you're in it for. That's what football's all about, those moments that, you know, you live for. And they come round every so often and they take your breath away and then hopefully you can stay on top. But if you don't, you always know that sometime in the future you will get a moment like that again. But as for City, when you know, they got took over and they started becoming classed as a big six and they were challenging for titles and that, I just thought that it's another team that we can't compete with money-wise, but at least they can compete with the likes of United and Chelsea, because all my life I've seen United win everything. And it was a bit like, I'm getting sick and tired of this now. I'm kind of immune to the fact that they're winning it. Could someone come and do something for me? And then City did. But I even now, I sit here, and the only reason I think City is a massive game is because they're the ones who are closest to us in my eyes. So that, but if, you know, if it was any other season past, I'd say I'm not really bothered about City because they don't have the history. It's not like a Man United, Liverpool. I think even Liverpool, Arsenal have more history. Definitely. That used to be a great game. But, like, City, I don't think they can class themselves as, you know, unbelievable in the sense because, A, they haven't won a Champions League, and B, they're nowhere near the amount of titles that us and United have.
It's true. But especially that season when they stopped United getting 20 times. Aguero in the last minute. But, yes, Sam, I'll move on to you. In 13-14... we play City on the 13th of April with 5 games to go. They've got two games left in hand. Obviously, we beat them to go top on 77. You've got Chelsea on 75, City are on 70. But they've still got the 2 games in hand. But it did still feel, obviously, before the game, we had the bus welcome. After the game, Gerrard had the big huddle and that. So history's forming between us, but it still challenges. After the season finished, after all calmed down, were you more angry? Once, I don't know if angry is the word, but were you more angry towards Chelsea than City? Obviously, Mourinho's antics, Torres' assistant, Willian to end our title dreams.
I think so, definitely, because, you know, Chelsea, as when I was first started going to match, it was obviously after Istanbul, and that's so the semi-finals and quarter-finals against Chelsea. It was always the games you wanted to win. So for me, I think definitely, like you've just said, when Torres went one-on-one with the Mignolet and laid it off, you know, he was the man who started it all off for me. So I think that, you know, rubbed it in a little bit more. But you had to take your hat off to City that season, and like they've done every other season, they're just absolutely ruthless. But I definitely felt more hatred towards Chelsea, I could say.
Chelsea, definitely. I'll stick with you. Then 15-16, we lose Sterling to City, and obviously kills Liverpool fans because ego dropping down to like we're a big massive club, well bigger than City you could imagine to be, and we've lost arguably our best player at that time to them. Then we get Klopp in that October, and we play them in the League Cup final, obviously in February. But then later on, I think later on that month, Pep gets announced. And so for me, best manager in the world at that time, gets announced to City. They're obviously big pressure on them winning the Champions League. How did you feel when he got announced that they were signing Pep and obviously Klopp and he just took over at this point?
I wouldn't say I was worried, like, because, you know, we turned them over in the league, both games. We beat them at their place, and then even though we just slipped up in the final, we beat them at Anfield, didn't we, about 3 days later or something like that. But then,
yeah,
obviously, it's Guardiola. He's been to Germany and Spain and won everything possible. Yeah. So I think that was always the thing with City. They'd never quite got to that level of the Champions League, whereas we had. So I think that it brought a little bit of worry in regarding the Champions League anyway.
Yeah, it's true, because he was getting announced in for the start of the next season, isn't it? Chloe, 17, 18, both Pep and Klopp, they've had time to bed in, bringing the players. City are flying in the Champions League finals. And at this point in the league, anyway, people are saying that it's arguably the best Prem side ever. The bus welcome, obviously, before the game. And for Liverpool and Chelsea especially, which could say what's happened with City, the Champions League, the European games, is what makes a rivalry. It grows it, doesn't it? And after that game, Company said, didn't he, that between the players and the City fans, Liverpool were the team now that they wanted to beat the most, especially after that bus welcome. And do you think, you know, when that game happened, he dropped Sterling on the bench, was that the big sign of respect for Pep? And that Liverpool fans, especially with the atmosphere, took City seriously now at this point?
Yeah, I think in the bus welcome, they'd already had it. I think before that game even started, they knew that they were never going to win this game because of the atmosphere. And that's what Liverpool does. That's what Anfield is. It's a fortress for a reason. You know, there's so many reasons why fans all across the world want to go and see their team play Liverpool at Anfield. And it's because the fans, a European night, you know, the connection Liverpool have with their fans is like no other in the world.
Yeah.
And it's so special. And I think sometimes players, managers, they can play the occasion more than they can actually play the game for what it is. And maybe that night, before they even kicked the ball, I think they already knew they'd lost. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, that game, I remember I'm usually nervous. You know, I may not be nervous the day before, but 20 minutes before kickoff, I am shivering in the cup. Like, I just am. And I'll get over it as soon as it starts. But, like, I was not nervous for some reason, and I don't know why. And I think the more we actually, you know, we started going up, we got a goal, two goals, that's when I got nervous, because I knew now that there was something to lose. You know, we were seen as kind of the underdogs in the league, you know, and stuff like that. But in the Champions League, it was kind of, that's Liverpool. That's their competition. And it was kind of like, we're back. Like, we've not reached this stage in a while. We're now here and we're beating the best of the best. And it kind of made you think that, to me, as a Liverpool fan, it made me think what we've done for these years that Klopp's been here, it's all actually leading somewhere. The rebuild's doing something and we're going to be at the top, at the very top. And now you look back on those moments and you think, wow, what defining moments they were, because now, you see, every time we play City, Pep is always a little bit aggravated with us, because he knows that, I think he also knows that Liverpool, if it was any other time, he wouldn't really care about City. But because we're top and they're top, it's kind of the biggest game in terms of, like, decisive moments. If you get those 3 points ahead of them, then, you know, kick on, and he probably won't be able to come back. So It that was a massive game for me, and it's led us to where we are now, and I'm so thankful for the journey, because it's gave me some highlights.
Oh, it's been great, hasn't it? You know, Chloe makes a good point, you know, about being nervous and that, but not being nervous before City, because that before the game at the home leg was bouncing, wasn't it? It was unbelievable. But come the second leg, there's a big massive debate, isn't it, about what's the best goal for celebration that you've been in. But I remember I was at City in the Champions League, and we made, obviously ours is a lot more hostile, but for City away, they were hostile that day, weren't they, whistling every single time players had the ball. It was, they tried to replicate Anfield effectively. But I just want to ask you about, obviously, City's atmosphere and the way they took to us, and that Salah ball was the best.
Yeah, well, the thing with that is, like, obviously I've been to City quite a few times before that, and obviously every game, whenever Liverpool go anywhere, it's, you know, it's big, like, everyone wants to be, the atmosphere is always good, but I noticed really that night in particular, like on like, you know, the segregation and stuff, and then especially when we came out after the game, like their fans are just like barbaric, really. Like it was like honestly, it was like being at Everton or United, and it was first time thought, like, wow, we've really gone to their skin here. And I think it's more, if you put into context, like they were on for the 100 points that season and they went on to do it. But all the media wanted to talk about was us being back in Europe, us going all, like, we were literally dismantling teams on our way to Kiev. And we took the meet, like, you know, everyone started, like, speaking about us more than City. And, I thought, like, that night, like, City's fans, that's the first time I've ever sat up and thought, oh, my God, like, you know, these really hate us. Now it's turned into a proper rivalry. But in terms of that fall for Salah, me and my mates, we say it now, like, that's the best I've been in.
The best.
It was just, I mean, I was in the upper tier, but I don't think it matters where you were, to be honest. I thought it was just boss, and it just topped off a boss day. And then everyone always forgets about Firmino's goal after it as well. Like,
yeah,
it was,
true.
You know, but like when Salah's goal, like it just, the way it just dinked in, it took ages to go in. Yeah. But when it went in, our end just exploded and it was boss, and then it just set us off. And then obviously everyone knows what happens in Kiev, but to be honest, still look back on that season, as Chloe said, and it's just the memories you got from it are brilliant.
Brilliant, it is true. And then you look at, in such a small amount of time, that's another piece of history between the Liverpool and Man City rivalry. You know, it's short amount of time, like quite a bit of history between us. But I'll move on to Chloe. So after the 17-18 season, we get to Kiev, we lose the Champions League final. City won, beat us by 25 points overall in the league. Obviously, we finished fourth, but there's a 25-point gap. So between us going into that season, we're looking at cutting the gap, aren't we? Not effectively winning the league, but cutting the gap. But we start that season flying. Pep comes to Anfield. He's made up with a point. He plays for a draw. And then we obviously play them on the 3rd of January at the Etihad. I think we were the first team to have more than 50% in the league against City under Pep. And then the 11mm John Stones over the line, it did feel a bit like a deal breaker, and that by losing that game, the momentum that City would have, that it'd be hard to win the league, even though we were still right in it.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, you kind of need to beat, you need to take points off the team that you're challenging with, it's that simple. You can't expect them to slip up against smaller teams. And we know what City was like. They'd done it for maybe 2-3 seasons now. They were so ruthless. They were the best in the league at the time. And, you know, you just felt hard done by. You felt in the kind of sense of, well, it's not happening now, is it? Like, if there was ever a sign that it's not going to happen, that's it. Nothing's going to fall for us here, you know. And it was such a scruffy moment, because I think Salah is like, so like he's inches away from, you know, touching that ball in if John Stones doesn't get a scruffy clearance. If he actually hits the ball properly, it hits Salah and goes in. And you just sit there and you think to yourself, maybe not this season. But, you know, at the same time, you always have hope. It's what kills you in football at times. The idea of you can be 15 points off and somehow, somewhere still in you, you've got hope that you can win the league. And for me, it was really sad, obviously, to drop points to them and to give up the title. But at the same time, I always knew we had Champions League. And after the season before, you know, Kiev, right now, even now, I've went to Madrid, but Kiev is the best holiday, class holiday, as I've ever had, because it was just scousers upon scousers upon scousers in Ukraine, in Kiev, like in like small little buildings which had absolutely no hot water at all, but everyone was sad and everyone loved it and everyone was there for the moment. And, you know, even watching the game, you know, you sat in that ground and you felt a bit deflated. But after it, I thought we'd be back, and I thought, you know, the next season, maybe we could go one step further. And I didn't expect us to maybe climb the gap as much against City as we did. So then, obviously, from doing that, it then gave me even more hope for the next season. And it's what you know, shows you that you should trust in these players and in this manager.
No, definitely. It's true. I completely agree. Just to go back, Cam, do you want to know what was bigger game for you? The Champions League, City second leg, or the league, and the atmosphere-wise at the Etihad, because we got beat 2-1 that day, which for me was the best game the Prem's ever seen quality-wise. The tempo, the players, it was unbelievable. Bernardo Silva must have run everywhere that day. What was the better atmosphere and the biggest game for you out of them two?
Well, for me, shout out to Lizzie Doyle, because she had my ticket for the Premier League one, because I was on holiday, but yeah, that's another thing. But for me, the thing with that is, when they beat us at the final whistle, like, you see, I think I always remember, like, it went on Guardiola shaking Klopp's hand or something, and, like, the camera's proper shaking, and it just showed how much it meant to them. And, like, that was, like, I think they thought that was, like, getting one back on us, even though we still had the Champions League to fall back on. Like, I think with them, they was always trying, like, find, like, little points against us and little point scorers. But, yeah, obviously, like, I thought, for me, like, the Champions League, like, because City, they're, like, up and coming and that, like, they still don't know what it takes to have, like, a big European night. Like, their fans just haven't got it, like, instilled into them. Like, you can have all the money you want, all the players and all that, but it's, you know, it's one of them, like,
for them.
Yeah. Like, obviously, the league is a brilliant achievement. What they've done is brilliant and can't take anything away from them. But I think you've got to be cut from a certain cloth for, like, the European nights. And
yeah.
I just don't think they've got it in them, no matter what team they have. And, like, you know, people saying they're favourites for this year, but I don't know. I just don't know what it is about them in Europe. But yeah, so I'd have to say, for me, like, for Liverpool, the European Cup just means naturally more to us than the league. So I'd probably say for us, 17-18, that second leg. But then the league for them, like, they would just go in hell for leather for that. So, you know, it's split, isn't it?
No, it's true. Sam, obviously we lose the league to City by a point. And on the plane back from Brighton, they're singing about Kiev and Liverpool and all that. And it felt like they proper hated us, didn't it?
Yeah.
What did you make of that? And how did it feel losing the league to City by a point?
It was obviously tough to take, you know, especially being in the ground and then Brighton obviously going 1-0 up. You thought, you know, like, they might actually be on here. But then after the game, you know, you felt terrible. But then I remember the ground was absolutely bouncing. There was smoke bombs going off everywhere. All the players made up. I remember Klopp just looking at the cop and thinking, like, we've got a European Cup final to go. You know, like Chloe said, we can go one better this year and might actually win it. And we did, luckily. So I think that made it, took the limelight away from them a bit about the title, didn't it? Which obviously made everyone feel a little bit better.
It was softened, wasn't it? But they're still in. You could see their on the flight back from Brighton singing about us. You could see that.
That's the thing with them, though. It's like they beat Leicester on the Monday, like, company, like, scored in, like, that top corner. And then the next night, we go knock Barcelona out. Like, we always do one better than them. So you can't understand, like, why they get so agitated. Because just as they're getting to, like, the peak, or just as they think, right, it's our time, we always just come out and brush them away. So I can half see, like, especially from City's point of view, like, why they've got such, like, such a rivalry with us.
I blame myself for the company scoring, because I said, oh, Sam, would you have a shot? And then he shot and played. And I was like, maybe not then.
There'll have been a hundred like you saying the exact same thing. But now, can we go back to you just to finish off then? How would you have wanted to win the league? Are you happy the way we won it, or would you like to win it at the Etihad? Obviously, we got the guard of honour, but, you know, William, the one who ruined our title chances in 13-14 with that goal for Chelsea, come back full circle and scored against City to win us the league.
Yeah, no, and you know, I've never thought about the whole William full circle thing, to be honest. I think it was probably because I was just that nervous waiting for the whistle to go. I wasn't even taking anything in. But, yeah, I mean, like, the way it happened, no fans and all that, like, I just wanted us to just get over the line, to be honest. But if it was a pre-COVID Wales, obviously would have loved to have won it at City. I mean, I know there was the chance to win at Goodison, but if we're speaking about City, like, winning it there would have been Boston. And I think these are the type of things where, like, if like, psychologically, it can probably hit them. Like, do you know, if we've gone there and won it, I was saying before all this, like, before, like, no fans in the ground, I was saying if we can go to City and win the league, the stuff, like, how much of a dent that'll be for them next season. So probably, would have took it winning at City.
No, I think Salah said the same, didn't he? Where he said he'd rather have won it at City, ideally. But no, I enjoyed that. Nice one to Cam, Sam and Chloe. Enjoy the game of the weekend, everyone. And back to John.
And it's back, John Gibbons for the weekend. It wasn't that good, is right, Harrison. Brilliant stuff, going to steal all our jobs. I'm still with Adam Melia, by Kiefer O'Neill and by Dan Austin, to look ahead to Manchester City. And it felt, I was going to say, it feels like a big game now. It was always going to be a big game, Kiev. You know, it's arguably must win now in terms of, you know, us having any pretense of becoming champions this season. They just look really good, Man City, and it sort of snuck up on me in that they were struggling a bit earlier in the season. I saw them get battered by Leicester and I thought, oh, these are nothing to worry about. And then they've just sort of clicked into gear much sort of earlier than we have, really. And I don't know, my concern is if we don't beat them, I'm not quite sure who is going to.
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, that is the worry, isn't it? I feel like Liverpool have got to beat them because you just don't know if anyone else is capable enough of beating them. They played Tottenham and Arsenal, but, you know, those teams have been a bit iffy all season, haven't they? Sort of come in and out of form. As Tottenham sort of leave form, Arsenal seem to be finding their feet and then, you know, just all a bit mad. So you can't really depend on anyone. Liverpool have had to only depend on themselves, but they've dropped far too many points to do that. So it's a worry going into the weekend, but like you said before, you know, the game will be open. You'd imagine Liverpool will have quite a lot of fun with it, more so than they did against Brighton. They seem to turn up for the bigger games, and I don't know, they've had a bit of a stranglehold on City at times over the past few years, and I feel like if they could just tap into that, that would be excellent, wouldn't it? And I don't know, as much as City are on this mad pedestal now and they're like unbeaten in a million games, and I'm at that point where they beat Burnley last night, but I just had to check the score then, because once it got to 2-0, I just thought there's no point in even checking it because they've won, and it just remained 2-0 apparently.
At that point,
and it's February, which is a bit grim because I'm already at that point. Usually it was a bit later in the seasons when we battled, you know, not last season because we ran away with it, but, you know, the couple of seasons before, it felt like it was sort of later on that you just stop checking their results. But, you know, I've already stopped checking them now because it's just another win on the board, and that's, you know, what they're doing. I just feel like, I don't know, last season they sort of lost their head for a time. I think they struggled a little bit with injuries, and Liverpool really, like, you know, that's when they cemented the place, just kept winning and were ruthless. I don't think City are, I know they're without De Bruyne at the minute, but, you know, they've touched quite lucky this season in comparison to Liverpool. I think everyone probably have. But I don't know, there's still something there. I think they could, like, as mad as, like, you know, a couple of days ago, we were flying. We had the best deadline day fun ever. And, you know, Liverpool won back-to-back games in London. They were playing some good football again. Everything felt rosy. You know, fast forward a couple of days, we've lost to Brighton and they're moving the camps a little bit down. I think things, you know, can affect any team. And I don't think City are free from that at all. You know, I think they lose to Liverpool and, you know, maybe Tottenham or Arsenal take some points off them, which is, you know, asking a lot, but you don't know. And Liverpool just go on a courageous run, get them centre-backs in, just playing alongside each other, and things can be different. I think, like Adam said before, you know, you can't chase top four, you've got to chase the league title. I just think that sets you up better mentally. And, you know, when all these players are back next season, Liverpool are going to be challenging for the title again, and maybe again the season after that, you know, and again after that, because they're there now. They've got this sort of squad and the mentality. We're just in a rough patch at the minute. And I think, you know, a massive thing to fix that is a win. And against Man City, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better team to beat at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, they'll certainly be up for it, Dan, and hopefully they'll have a few back as well. Obviously, we're doing this before the press conference. Josh will be hosting the team talk, which is straight after for our subscribers. And, you know, he'll have more information on injuries and things like that. But you'd hope we can get at least one of Mane and Fabinho on the pitch, Dan, if not both. And then, obviously, there's some centre-halves there who he didn't use last night for, you know, understandable reasons, but he must be tempted to unleash at least one of them Sunday.
He might be. I don't think he will, though. You know, we've seen with pretty much every player that he's bought that he prefers to bet them in. You know, Robertson barely played for 6 months, did he? When Alberto Moreno was still there. Obviously, it's an unprecedented situation in terms of the injuries and stuff, but I think that that's just the most intense, you know, baptism of fire for two lads that have not played at anything like this level before. You know, I've got really high hopes for both of them. I think they might be really good players for Liverpool in the long run, but I think he might just go with what is perceived as safety for this one. And Henderson and Phillips have played really well, in fairness to them. I know it damages Liverpool further forward, but they've played really well, and he might just think, you know what, I'll ask them to go one again, and then after that I can bed someone in. I know that everyone was really excited and really happy with getting the centre-halves, but it did my head in a bit that they got them in the way that they did, because, you know, like the situation isn't that different at the end of January than what it was in October or November. I know that they found out that Matip's out for the season, but Liverpool still needed a centre-back, preferably two, and they still waited till the end, and we could so easily be in a situation now where Davis was brought in early January and didn't play a couple of games, maybe played United in the Cup, yada, 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 and now he definitely can't play this one at the weekend because he's better than Klopp's likes the look of him, so on and so forth. And that might seem like idealist thinking, but the goalposts didn't shift in that time. You know, whoever's decision that was to leave it till the last minute, like their negligence, whatever you want to call it, has cost Liverpool in this month. It's going to continue to cost Liverpool while those two players betting. You know, the second lad Carback only arrived in the country a couple of days ago, so I highly doubt that he's involved from the start. I just think that the time makes it really, really hard to get any of them up to speed enough to get the teammates around them to trust them. So I think we might just end up seeing a very similar team to the one that played Brighton. Milner might not play in it, I think, because I think he looks absolutely knackered. He was possibly injured, I think, after the game on Sunday, wasn't he? And I was surprised that he played the other night because I thought he'd definitely want him in the side for City, but I think that might not necessarily be possible now. I think you just sort of have to ask a lot of the same lads to go again. I think if I could pick somebody to start in a particular position, I would want Fabinho to be playing at the base of midfield, because I think whatever we've been doing at the base of midfield lately hasn't necessarily been working very well. You know, they persisted with Thiago as a six on his own for ages, in spite of the fact that it weren't working. They've moved on from that now, but we were getting walked through again too easily last night by Brighton on the break. So I think the more than getting Henderson back into midfield, I feel desperate for Fabinho to play there, because I just think that he helps you so much when a team is breaking on you, in terms of the tackles that he can put in, the reading of the game, and he can also drop in and be that third centre half at times. And you know, City might be without De Bruyne and also Aguero. You know, I think they deserve enormous credit for dealing with the injuries that they've got. It's nothing like the scale that Liverpool have got, but they've still been missing key players for a fair bit of the season, and they've put together 13 wins on the spin. And as you were saying before, I did not expect their manager to be able to do that. I thought when he was going crackers at various points last season that he was not long for leaving there, but he's turned it around really well in terms of their mentality and ability. You know, they've got six midfielders usually in the front three positions lately, or maybe five plus Sterling or something like that, and every single one of them looks like they can score. So I think if we're going to be able to attack them, we need our fullbacks to be able to go forward, and therefore we need somebody playing the sixth position who can drop in and sort of make it a back three at different times in order to be able to cover a one-on-one for each of the lads that will be the nominal forwards for them. I think it'll be dead hard, but because of the nature of the poor games that Liverpool have been playing lately, I would give us more chance of doing well in this one than if we were playing West Brom or Fulham or whoever it would be.
If I could offer you someone to come in the weekend, Adam, who would you pick? Dan's gone for Fabinho there in midfield, which is an interesting one. Who would you go for?
I'd go for Fabinho as well, but I can't imagine him playing in midfield with Henderson at centre half. I can't see that, just because of the way it's kind of gone. Not exactly pecking order, but the way we've ended up sort of resorting to Henderson after Fabinho being there. I think it's more likely that Fabinho would be centre half with Phillips and Henderson would be back in midfield. I think I'd say Fabinho. I'd take over Mane. Hopefully it isn't just a choice of one or the other. I'm quite optimistic that they'll both play, to be honest. I think that they've been being geared up towards playing in this game. It feels like, you know, the way Klopp sort of talked about them, a bit vague, but like, you know, it's not, their injuries aren't that bad, they're just not going to play in this game. It feels a bit like they had an eye on the City game. And I think in general with our injuries, I think we've kind of got an eye on the City game, and the Champions League coming back. It feels a bit like that in a way, that they're kind of gearing up to the... We quite often have a bit of a dip, don't we, in January, and this is sort of January now, isn't it? Because of the way the season's gone, and then build up for the run in once the Champions League comes back. And I do think that they'll have had that plan. So I would say I'd take Fabinho and slot him back into centre half. I would like to see one of the new lads playing, but again, as Dan says, when I think about it in my heart of hearts, I think Klopp might just feel like it's a bit our ass to put against City. I think if it was anybody else, they probably would at home. But it just feels a bit soon and a bit tight.
Okay. What would you like to see from Liverpool then, Kiva? You know, we're talking about individual players, but, you know, it's a collective thing, isn't it? You know, a football, that's what it is. And, you know, how do you think they can attack Man City? How do you think they can get at them? And how do you think, you know, we can win this game, which is what we need to do?
God, I'm really not sure. Is the honest answer. It just feels like after that result, you, I don't know, just puts you down, doesn't it? A little bit, you know. Man City are absolutely flying down to the 13th win, which is just ridiculous. I think.
Yeah, that's a shame, innit?
I mean, it's going to have to be one of them games where I feel like Man City are all over us and Liverpool break quite well, quite fluently, similar to the sort of West Ham break. You need real magical moments like that, I think. And for them to have that weird sort of, sometimes they have that weird unluckiness against Liverpool. Just like, you know, Mahrez blazing the penalty over the bar, Sterling missing from close. You know, you need sort of that moment, because one thing Liverpool haven't had this season is luck. They just haven't had it. Like, it's been very rare Liverpool have had luck, and all champions need it throughout the season, whether it's in the early stages or the late stages. It just felt like last night there was nothing going to fall Liverpool's way in terms of, like, you know, a good decision or a penalty or something like that. It just feels like they're free from that. And, you know, obviously the last game, Gomez handballed and City got a penalty. Like, is it Liverpool's turn now for something like that? Because it feels like that's something that could just sort of change the direction of how that game's going to go. Because, I mean, tactically, it's shaping up to be a thriller like it always is. You know, two teams that will go at each other. It's just going to be sort of, I feel like, end to end, and whoever can be more clinical. But Liverpool have just lacked being clinical, haven't they? So, I mean, it's a new day, it's a new dawn, it's a new day. So, we'll hope for better things. But I don't know. You do feel a little bit lost at the minute, don't you? After a result like that,
I wish we could be in there, Dan.
But I was just going to say that. Then I think there's dead interest and mentality things with both sides. Yeah. In that it might actually be easier for Liverpool to have a bit of self-belief about them, because if it's 0-0 on 20, they don't have to panic because they're playing a good fussy team. So maybe that will actually be easier for them. But it's going to be an awful lot easier for Manchester City as well, because an awfully big part of our excellent record against them is us. They can't hack it one bit. The worst decision that Pep Guardiola's made in his managerial career was telling his team to swap sides in that Champions League quarter-final and attack the cop first half, because it absolutely fucked them. They couldn't deal with everyone in the ground being absolutely feral. And it's happened so many times since. You know, Sterling really plays within his shell. Sergio Aguero has never scored against Liverpool at Anfield, which is wild considering he's been such an excellent footballer across the course of a decade and has played so many times against us. It really is a psychological issue for them coming and playing against us, and the majority of that, I think, is down to the crowd. So I think it might be a quite different Liverpool v Man City game at Anfield for those two reasons, that Liverpool have to change their own mentality from playing at home, and it might just be that bit easier because they'll be getting attacked more and will have the chance to counter themselves more. But also, you know, will City be able to bed in a little bit more, or will it just be dead weird for them? You know, having 5 minutes at the start and it's really quiet, will that be unnerving? I hope that it is. But I think it'll be really interesting to see sort of how the first 10, 15 minutes of the game go in terms of the way that both sides psychologically adapt to what is a mad circumstance. Because, you know, I think that although none of us, I know you just had that insight from the younger people, but none of us would say that Man City were Liverpool's biggest rivals, but Liverpool v Man City in the past few seasons has been the biggest league atmosphere at Anfield because of the stakes, because of the context, even bigger than derbies and United. So to go from that to absolutely no sound whatsoever, I think will be really interesting to see how both of them and both of the managers deal with it.
We shall see. Listen, there's loads more to preview Manchester City on Tourplay, which is our subscription service. So audio, obviously, we've got the team talk I mentioned before. Lots of things in the build-up, and then obviously straight after the game as well, we'll be doing our post-match reaction. And the video as well, the lads will be doing a preview from somewhere in the city centre. The last couple have been down the front and have looked absolutely lovely. And then post-match Pine Street after the game. We've also been speaking to a few journalists, Rafa Honigstein, who obviously wrote a book about Jürgen Klopp, and is obviously an expert on German football, and Rory Smith, just about the relationship between Klopp and Guardiola, and exploring that. I did those interviews and they were really interesting, and how they've changed over the years and across different clubs. So loads of reasons we think to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, and hopefully loads of reasons where you think Liverpool can beat Manchester City on Sunday and get back into it. And in the meantime, huge thanks to Adam, to Kiva and to Dan, and obviously everyone who contributed on the inserts as well. That's been the weekend. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the Reds on Sunday. Hopefully we're all celebrating best we can Sunday night. Cheers. Thanks, everyone. Sports Social Podcast Network.